Welcome to Healthcare Perspectives, a podcast by Siemens Healthineers about medical breakthroughs with the power to improve lives everywhere. Today, you'll hear a panel conversation on generative AI in radiology, led by Fabian Schöck, Head of Global Product Management for Artificial Intelligence Products at Siemens Healthineers. This panel was recorded live at the European Congress of Radiology, held this year in Vienna. The ECR is one of the leading events in radiology, as well as one of the world's largest international meetings of radiology professionals, radiographers, physicists, and industry representatives. In this episode, Fabian Schöck is joined by Dr. Johannes Haubold, Senior Physician for Clinical AI Integration at University Hospital Essen, and Isabel Eichs, a Senior Radiologist at University Medical Center Mannheim, both based in Germany.
Hello, my name is Fabian Schöck. In medical imaging, there's a constantly growing gap between the need for diagnostic imaging and the availability of specialist staff. At the same time, there are groundbreaking developments in the field of artificial intelligence. So, what potential does AI offer to support professionals, especially in radiology, not only today, but also in the future? Today, I'm joined by two guests, both experts in their respective fields, to talk more about AI and how it's being ingrained in radiology. This groundbreaking technology doesn't just enhance diagnostics, it saves lives by identifying cancer at the earliest, most treatable stages, says my first guest, Dr. Isabel Eichs. She's working as a senior radiologist at the University Medical Center Mannheim and specializes in radiology and diagnostic radiology with a strong focus on lung cancer screening. My second guest is convinced that special types of AI will ultimately unlock new possibilities for improved diagnosis and efficient workflows. He says, orchestration is key for clinical implementation. Welcome with me, Dr. Johannes Haubold from the University Hospital in Essen. He's a senior physician at the University Hospital Essen and heading, among other, a working group to implement AI integration into clinical practice at an early stage. So, AI technology is constantly evolving and has become an integral part of the healthcare industry. In clinical settings, its application is proving to increase accuracy and efficiency. But how does it work? Johannes, generative AI is one of the latest innovations when it comes to AI technology. Can you explain what generative AI is and describe the potential, especially in radiology?
Yeah, so generative AI tackles three main topics. So one topic is generating images, another topic is generating text, and the third topic is generating audio and everything in between. So generating text from images, images from text, audio from text, and so on. So it will influence every part of the patient journey in a vast amount.
And can you elaborate if those are like separate tasks, or do you see a potential for combining also these technologies?
Those are separate tasks. For example, for image generation, it will change the imaging. How can we acquire an R sequence, for example? Can we use case-based reduced images to accelerate MR imaging, for example? Or they will help us to reduce the dose of contrast agents we use for MR or CT. Those are some examples for those image generation networks. For text generation, they will help us to generate reports, to structure unstructured data, for example. And yeah, I think those are the most important topics.
Fascinating. Isabel, one focus of your work is lung cancer screening and how AI can contribute for the early detection and targeted diagnosis and treatment of lung cancer. We know that screening and early detection are key to increase survival rates for lung cancer. In your experience, can AI help with that task?
Definitely. When talking about lung cancer screening, we just have to figure out what we're talking about. Thinking about Germany, we don't have a lung cancer screening at the moment. So we have to include persons at risk. And depending on how we set the levels, we are taking age and nicotine abuse as the underlying factors. And we estimate that we have around 5.5 million persons at risk in Germany. guessing that everyone gets a CT scan once a year, then there are 5.5 million CT scans. Let's say one CT scan has 600 images. So that's 3.3 billion images, and somebody has to read them. And then there are not more radiologists coming there. So somebody has to read them. And this is where AI comes into. So this is just like the AI looks over your shoulder and helps you in the main setting finding nothing. That's what you want. We don't want to find a nodule. We don't want to find cancer, of course. And the AI is extremely good in detecting that there are no nodules, so there's no cancer. It's really simple saying when the AI doesn't find anything and I take a short look, there won't be anything. And I think that's the main advantage at the moment, that coming to the lung cancer screening, that we can include all these patients. We don't have the waiting times for the reports. We can do something. We won't be able to do it without AI. It's simply not possible. There's too many images to look at. And that's just lung cancer. Just one scan.
So it's both an aspect of safety and efficiency at the same time.
Definitely. Because when you are in an outpatient setting, it's always better to have four eyes looking at the images. So the second eyes are the AI, and they're excellent in this, you call it true negative way, so that there are no lesions. And this is one where we have almost 100% with the AI. That's really something that no radiologist will make that.
Johannes, when you hear about that, and we just heard about generative AI and the benefits, can you tell us how this technology, how you see that transforming then these clinical workflows? And also, do you see any limitations in its application?
Yeah, I think it all starts with the anamnesis of the patient. So the first step is that it helps us to translate our spoken words into a written report. And I think the next step will be that it helps us to structure unstructured information. So if you talk about, for example, that the patient has diabetes, or if you talk about the patient has some cardiac diseases, the large language model may detect that you talked about diabetes, and it will hard code the information that the patient has diabetes in our clinical information systems. And this information can be used for the workflows. So if you know the patient has diabetes, you may ask the patient prior to the CT scan whether he has taken some metformin, for example. So it's very hard to describe at which points it influences the patient journey, because it will influence the patient journey in total. So I think the next step will be that it can give you suggestions to find the suitable protocol for CT imaging. It helps you to read the prior reports of prior CT examinations. Maybe tells you that the patient already had some fractures and something like this. This is the big topic of large language models. And the other big topic is, as I told you, the image generation topic, and the topic of accelerating MR can totally change patient workflows, because if it's possible to scan like 80 patients per day at one MR scanner, you can totally change your workflows, because it's much easier to acquire MR for a patient.
That's really exciting. Yeah? And we've heard now already some of the benefits and already some specific use cases of where AI can help and really be transformational. Yeah. So Isabel, in your experience, what do you see the biggest benefit? And also looking at the aspects of what AI can do standalone versus in conjunction with a human or augmenting the human reader, do you see any specifics in that and increasing efficiency and or accuracy for the tasks at hand?
I think a lot of people are worried that they are replaced by the AI, and I think that's not going to happen. The AI has two roles. I think one is kind of simulating a radiologist. That's when I say the true negative weight. When you say, okay, it's the second eye looking at the images, finding nothing. That's the second radiologist, let's say it like that. The AI is able to see patterns, maybe better than we are, but we have time to think about what is it in the end. So we have more time for the more complex cases. The time-consuming point in our daily work is this counting lymph nodes, measuring diameters. That's what takes time, and that's what the AI can do actually better than we can. But this complex thinking, that's where our part is then again. So we go away from this really, we have to calculate, we just have to do 1.1, and we're going to somewhere where we're thinking more complex way. So we always have a second opinion, and we take this into consideration, but the really diagnostic working, this is what we have time for, but we can stress on. I think this is the really stage if we come there.
So the radiologist working on top of their license, really bringing the essence of the patient information together into the right picture.
Exactly. We have a presentation of data then, and we can just combine it to a diagnosis, and we don't have to get the data. We get it presented by the AI.
Very interesting. Huh? And Johannes, you've been collaborating with industry partners for quite a long time, and you've developed also a new assistant for radiological diagnoses. What's the main point of that collaboration? And can you explain some of the progress that has already been made and the future that lies ahead?
Yeah, we are working on different kinds of large language models. We try to use a big amounts of data that lie in our hospital's information systems, and we try to enable the physician to access the important data points for the patient. So we developed, for example, a chatbot with which you can talk about the patient. So you can ask the chatbot what clinical preconditions does the patient has, and it will answer your questions and tell you which preconditions has the patient. But I think at the same time, we have to talk about limitations. So I think quality control is very, very important in terms of large language models, because we all know that large language models can confabulate, and we never want to rely on confabulated data. So we have a big focus on quality control, for example, for this network, which answers your questions on clinical preconditions. It will at the same time show you those data sources, where those informations derived from. So it's very easy for you to verify whether the network has worked correctly or not.
So Isabel, when you hear Johannes talk about such a tool, and when you think about these menial tasks that we had before, do you see like the immediate connection to lung cancer and how it could be of help, or also what risks might be there? How do you establish that quality control?
Definitely, because I mean, lung cancer screening is depending on risk factors, and the mainly risk factors is age and smoking history. So those are the two easy points. But there are prediction models where body mass index, family history, COPD, so other diseases come into account. And when you have an AI generating risk prediction module for the lung cancer screening established through all the data underlying, I think it would be great as an additional tool coming in for the lung cancer screening establishment in Germany.
Now that we've heard about some of the benefits of applying AI in clinical settings, I want to take a deeper dive into more concrete examples of how AI can be used to transform healthcare.
Definitely. I'm very happy you mentioned it, because this is the really big problem. When people think about lung cancer screening, they think about lung cancer and nothing else. But you have a chest CT for one point, and you have nicotine abuse at the other point. And nicotine doesn't come only with lung cancer. It comes with COPD. It comes with cardiovascular diseases. We always say lung cancer is the most common cause of cancer-related death. So most people who die because of a cancer, it's lung cancer. But looking worldwide, the most common cause of death are cardiovascular diseases. So we have the two top main causes of death and can include it or exclude it by one chest CT. And I think to not forget these diseases is extremely important. And when looking at AI, you have the possibility that you do not only find your nodule. So the AI comes in and says, okay, here's the nodule. I do a segmentation of the nodule. I do a volumetric analysis. And I compare it to the previous scan. So I have a so-called volume doubling time. I take a look at how fast do the lesions grow. When they're very, very fast, they're probably not malignant, they're infectious. But when they have like a volume doubling time from under 400 days, then we should be careful that that's not a malignoma. But taking the other diseases into account, you are able to quantify your emphysema. There was a few years ago, let's say 20 years ago, so that's how long we're doing lung cancer screening studies already worldwide, so we should come there by some point. There was a trial in the US, and that's kind of interesting because they primarily focused on the lung cancer screening idea. And then they analyzed the COPD, and lung cancer and COPD are among the top five causes of premature death in the United States. So you have one scan, and you can include or exclude three severe diseases. You have the top causes of death in here. So I think it's extremely important to use the AI, because when I read reports, it's never in there. It's only in there when an AI stressed on it. So I think it's extremely important to do that.
That's great to hear, and also touches also the importance of the routine screening programs and then tying into the research, right? So also, Johannes, that would be something I would be interested in, because I know your institution is very advanced when it comes to also appreciating the value of big data and taking large data cohorts for research. So what potential do you see with AI to advance also this field of imaging and medical research in general? Can you give any example for that or elaborate?
I think it can raise the accessibility of research in different topics. So I think we have the biggest FHIR database in Europe. So we have many, 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 many data points. Today, I think more than 1.7 billion data points in our database. But for doing research, you have to access those data points. And to access those data points, 3 years ago, you had to be an information technology specialist writing a script to access those data points. And today, with large language models, we, for example, build a large language model called Flame. You can automatically generate the code from a natural language question. So you can just ask, can you find all patients with a certain ICD-10 code? And can you give me the laboratory values 1 week prior to the coding of the ICD-10 code? It will transform your natural language question into a FHIR matrix query, perform this query, and give you the data set in an anonymized form. So it can raise the accessibility of research and gathering big data sets.
And then to bring it to the routine, orchestration is key. If I listen to your introductory statement, you mentioned that to make it effective.
I think this is one point I try to mention everywhere where I am, because I try to integrate all the algorithms into the clinical routine. Today, most of the orchestration is based on DICOM tags. So you have to send the correct images to the correct algorithm, but you have to implement a route somewhere in between. And implementing this route is today very complicated, because in most cases, it relies on mapping DICOM tags to other informations, and those DICOM tags and series descriptions change between hospitals. And I think we have to focus on making this orchestration process as easy as possible to raise the accessibility to AI algorithms, because we want to implement 20 or 30 AI algorithms into clinical routine and not only one or two algorithms.
And that requires not only the radiology department, but also all the clinics and all the departments to work together.
Yeah, and also the companies developing AI algorithms, they also have to focus on raising the accessibilities, because this complicated orchestration process is also associated with a lot of costs for the companies. And this cost will be given to the radiologist. So it's some kind of downward circle. So the radiologist doesn't want to have a lot of work implementing those algorithms, and he does not want to pay a lot of money for an algorithm. So I think we have to break this circle, and we have to automate the orchestration process.
Really move toward standardization so we can leverage the full potential and going for the scalability. Isabel, you're one of the world experts also in lung cancer, but also looking at the topics beyond thoracic CT. What would be your biggest potential areas that you would see for the leveraging the potential of AI in screening scenarios? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, we will need it for screening. I think it's not an if, it's a must. I really think so, and no matter what kind of screening. We do have lung cancer screening. It's very popular at the moment, but we will have to focus, as I just said, not on only lung cancer. There will be like a chest screening, maybe we can say it like that, or a nicotine screening, a risk factor associated screening. And with AI coming in, I really hope that we have the possibility to change the world of lung cancer and the world of lung diseases. Because at the moment, there are too many people dying through lung cancer, through COPD, through cardiovascular diseases. We have to address it in a very, very early stage. And we can only do this using AI just because of the overload of images we get. And the more we screen, I mean, as I said before, we have the 5.5 million in Germany and the 3.3 billion images. That's only when we don't find anything. Because if we do, we repeat the scans even more often. And then this simply explodes the analysis and the data. And this is now lung cancer screening. We will see where we are in a few years regarding other screenings. So AI has to support and has to be the second radiologist sitting always right next to you, supporting you. I think don't be afraid of it. Just use that.
That's a very, very good remark, yeah. Thanks to both of you. That was really a very impressive glimpse into your work and also the future of AI. Maybe to bring it also to a close here, I would like to step into the future one more time and ask you a last question, right, to both of you. Maybe, Johannes, you start first. What is the next big milestone that you would expect when it comes to the use of AI in radiology?
I think there are two milestones. First milestone would be an automated orchestration process. And the second milestone would be to move more forward to quantitative radiology. There's a lot of potential to get quantitative information from the images. How is the body composition of the patient? How is the bone density of the patient? How are the organs looking? So to extract those quantitative informations as a radiologist by the help of AI, I think will be a very important next step in terms of radiology.
Do you have one modality in mind?
It will start with CT imaging, but the transfer to MR will not take a long time. Mm-hmm.
I can simply agree. I also think we have to consider all the data that is in this image. We can't see it just by ourselves. It's too much data. I think also we start with CT, we go to MRI. So this is where the big data is lying in. I think additionally that AI has to move from these not being available to everyone. I think that's the one point. You have to learn how to use AI, to not be afraid of it, and that you want to use it. And I think that's where we have to start right in the beginning, that the radiologists are learning to work with AI and not against AI. I think that's where we really have to start, and that the future is together and not an against.
What better place to say this than here in Vienna, where radiologists are coming together to learn and to talk with us also from the industry partners about advancing AI. So really, thank you very much. I think today we've learned a lot about AI and also the potential to transform the healthcare industry for the better. Its ability to improve diagnostics, research and clinical workflows make the possibilities seem endless. But of course, there's still some work that lies ahead of clinicians and us solution providers to realize the full potential of AI when it comes to everyday use. I'd like to extend a huge thank you to my guests, Isabel Eichs and Johannes Haubold, for helping us to shed more light on this very exciting and innovative technology, and also to those of you listening, and thank you for being a part of this conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Healthcare Perspectives, a podcast by Siemens Healthineers. We pioneer breakthroughs in healthcare for everyone, everywhere, sustainably. Subscribe to us and always get the latest episode in your podcast feed, or visit siemens-healthineers.com/podcast for more. The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Siemens Healthineers. The statements by Siemens Healthineers customers in this podcast are based on results that were achieved in the customer's unique setting. Because there is no typical hospital or laboratory and many variables exist, e.g. hospital size, samples mix, case mix, level of IT and or automation adoption, there can be no guarantee that other customers will achieve the same results. This podcast describes possible future ideas and concepts. It is not intended to describe specific performance and or safety characteristics of currently planned or future products. Future realization and availability cannot be guaranteed.